try to separate conjecture from fact and conjecture from observation, to realizing what truly transpired in the Holy Land. The subject matter we're discussing this morning is going to be John the Apostle. We've considered the Apostle Paul in other studies. We've, each of us at one time or another, heard discourses concerning the apostles. I think, though, John, especially since I've had the opportunity and the blessing of the Lord to visit many places that John visited, I think it would be very opportune and a great blessing to discuss John's life. For his life was surely filled with much sorrow and with much blessing. First off, in Matthew 4:21, he is called by Jesus. Now, we won't take the time to read the scriptures, but we'll be mentioning a lot of places where scriptures will be mentioned, but it will be too numerous to mention at this time. Now, John had a father whose name was Zebedee. His mother was Salome. Now, this, suffice it enough, is mentioned in the scriptures. But in conjecture by early churches, probably around the 4th century, Salome is placed as the daughter of Joseph, Mary's husband. Now, this is conjecture, mind you. And this makes John the Apostle a stepbrother of Jesus. Now, from a scriptural standpoint, this kind of a thought has no merit. But early churches devised schemes and methods of embellishing the thoughts contained in the churches that they might build and develop a church by a matter of prestige and by things that would tend to enlarge the thoughts contained within the church. As we say, these kinds of thoughts are without any scriptural foundation. John, the Apostle John, was in all probability born in Bethsaida. This Bethsaida is on the northern shore of the Sea of Galilee. Jesus, on the other hand, was born in Bethlehem, was taken by his parents to Egypt, and after the death of Herod, returned again to Israel or Jerusalem. And he spent at least some of his young life in Jerusalem, for we know that at the age of 12, he discussed the law with the priests. For the most part, however, Jesus spent his life, the greater part of his life, from 12, we'll say, to at least 30, in the Nazareth area. Now, we can well imagine John being born in Bethsaida, as well as the other apostles. They were called from the area immediately surrounding the Sea of Galilee. That Jesus, Nazareth and the Sea of Galilee are about 12 miles apart. Now, Jesus didn't spend his whole days in his early life in Nazareth proper, but probably traveled, like all young people do, especially there, to the Galilee, and became good friends with the families of Zebedee. He probably met John and the other apostles, and as young lads, they would talk together. We surmise this, but in all probability, this did happen. Now, as we mentioned earlier, Matthew 4:21, he calls John to the apostleship. And we think, believe, that both families of Jesus and John were well instructed in religious matters. And this, no doubt, served a particular purpose for when Jesus did call John, their father Zebedee, being right by John, didn't get offer any resistance to the fact that here John is going to leave fishing and go and follow Jesus into discipleship. On the other hand, John hastily gave up fishing and followed after Jesus. John, the Apostle John, though he wasn't taught in the schools of Jerusalem, and therefore in later life, he was liable to reproach for having no recognized position as a teacher and no rabbinical education. This is from Acts 3:8. He would be taught to read the law and observe its precepts, and to feed upon the writings of the prophets. And this is with a feeling that their accomplishment was not far off. Now, all the disciples or apostles having been selected, they followed their new teacher, tooling around Galilee. This is in John 1:44. They were with Jesus initially at the marriage feast in Cana. Now, Cana is immediately maybe 3 miles north and east of Nazareth. Now, Cana would be, in other words, between Nazareth and the Sea of Galilee. Now, after the marriage feast, they journeyed with Jesus to Capernaum. And this is in John 2:12-22. And thence from there, they went down to Jerusalem, John 4:8. After Jerusalem, they came back to Samaria. Now, Samaria would be in the land where we were discussing a bit earlier this morning, where the Mount of Ebal and Gerizim is. This is the valley of Shiloh. This is in the Jezreel Valley. This is where the Mount of Gilboa is, the Mount Carmel, part of Megiddo. Now, certainly Jesus, in his travels, had an interest in these places, especially, I would think, Shiloh, for here, the Tabernacle of the Wilderness was encamped for 40 years. Upon returning to Galilee, it seems as though for a time that the apostles went back to their trades of fishing. But by and by, Jesus calls them again. Whether there's two calls or not, we're not quite positive on this. Nonetheless, the statement is made that they follow after Jesus again and thence never to return to their former occupations. Now, in all the accounts of the Gospels and Acts, we only have a few traces of the individual characters and turning points of the apostles' lives. In the total list of all the apostles, there's 4 of the apostles that stand out most. 2 are from the son of Jonas, and 2 are from the sons of Zebedee. They apparently, though Jesus loved all the apostles, they came within the innermost circle of Jesus' special friends. Peter, Andrew, James, and John. 3 are with him when none else are. When we recall the account from Mark, the 5th chapter, 35-43, where the 12-year-old damsel dies. Is in the death chamber. Then in Matthew 17:1-8, in the Mount of Transfiguration, James, of course, is with them, the Lord this time. In the destruction of Jerusalem,
as Jesus forewarns them of this destruction. If these four, the three are with him in Mark 3:8-3, they're with him in the agony of Gethsemane. Now, of this group, Peter, the Apostle Peter, is the apparent leader. However, as ardent and as strong as Peter was, to John belongs the most memorable distinction, that he was the disciple that Jesus loved. Excuse me. This love is not returned without great affection by Jesus. The name Boanerges in Mark 3:17 implies a zeal and an intensity which gave those who had this name a particular name or implication. And this was that they were the sons of thunder. That spirit of love and intensity which broke out again and again in the apostles' lives, especially John's and Peter's, was something to behold. That spirit was exemplified when Salome asked that her two sons, John and James, might sit on the right hand of Jesus in the kingdom. And making the statement that they were ready to drink of that cup that he was to drink out of. The Spirit showed forth when they rebuked the one who cast out devils in the name of the Lord, who was not of their company. That Spirit existed when they sought the Lord to cast fire down from heaven upon the villages of the Samaritans for their wrongdoings in Luke 9:54. So John was a son of thunder. Now John, by and by, through his mother Mary Magdalene, through his mother and Mary Magdalene, Mary, the mother of Jesus, and Jesus have a special family relationship in Bethany. This is from the John 11th chapter. Now we can well imagine that, for instance, when Lazarus died, that John was there. And the compassion that he felt for them as a family. At the Last Supper, the disciples whom Jesus loved as a chosen and favored friend reclines at the table. All the others were seating. John reclines at the table with what? He reclines with his head on the master's chest. This was love. Now John and Peter at the Last Supper were specially selected, and because of their zeal and because of their love for the Lord, they exemplified this. Now John and Peter were sent by Jesus to prepare the supper. Now when this was all accomplished, the betrayal accomplished, it was John and Peter who followed, not too far off, and while the others of the apostles actually fled for safety. And they fled in hasty flight, in my head. John apparently had a personal acquaintance with Caiaphas the priest, which enabled he and Peter to enter during the master's trial. John was admitted even to the council chamber. You had to be special in order to do this. This was not a permissible thing.
He also follows Jesus to the praetorium, where he was tried by Pilate and where he was scourged. Now, after this was all over, and then with the desire to see even the end, and the love that was stronger than death itself, it sustained him through all the terrors and sorrows of that day. He followed to Calvary with his mother, also with Mary, and with Mary Magdalene. The teacher who had been to him as a brother bees him a brother's duty. He is to be the son to the mother who is to be left desolate in John 9:26 and 27. Now the Sabbath that follows after the crucifixion is spent within the same company with his loved ones. He receives Peter back in spite of his denial, in the spirit of the old friendship that he had with him. It is Peter and John that Mary Magdalene runs and tells of the emptied sepulcher. John runs from Bethany to the sepulcher, as does Peter. They both run. John gets there first and sees the clothes, the cloth lying about. Peter, on the other hand, enters into the sepulcher first. The last, for at least 8 days, the apostles John and Peter remain in Jerusalem. This is John 20:26. John and Peter are together in Galilee and visit the familiar places that they grew up in. And there, John's first to recognize Jesus in the dim morning while they're out on a boat on the shores of the Lake Galilee. Peter, however, swims ashore to meet him. Now, the history of the Acts of the Apostles shows us a closeness that John and Peter had from this point on in their lives. They are together at the Ascension. They're together at Pentecost. Together they enter the temple as worshipers and protest against the threats of the Sanhedrin. They're fellow workers of the church for the first great steps of its expansion. The persecution which was waged on by Saul did not drive them or any of the apostles from the posts that the Lord had assigned them, and this was mainly in Jerusalem and Galilee. The sharper, though shorter, duration of the persecutor waged on by Herod Agrippa brought sorrow to John from Acts 12:2, for his brother was killed by the sword, brother James. Now, 15 years after the Apostle Paul's first visit to Jerusalem, he is still being helped in Jerusalem by John, Peter, and helped in settling the controversy between the Jewish brethren and the Christian brethren, Acts 15:6. He was one of the ranking chief pillars of the church, of which he did, like the work which he did until he left Israel. Now, after that controversy between the Christians and the Jews, there's not too much information in the scriptures of Acts that was given as to what work it was that John did. But we did surmise that he traveled about Israel, preaching, healing, and showing forth the wisdom of God. There was probably the special calls for him in Judea and Samaria to instruct and teach the church. I believe that we can safely feel that in all events, the natural elements of his character, with all their fiery energy, became purified and mellowed, rising step by step to a high serenity, which we find not perfected in Israel, but perfected when he left Israel and went to Shemaiah, or during the closing portion of his life. Having accomplished his life purpose, John moves on to Asia Minor and to the seven churches. Different writers would question as to the time of this move. Jesus, having instructed John to care for his mother, I think we can safely say, and I do believe it, that he stayed at least till the death of Mary. Some writers in later centuries, I say we try to separate conjecture from reality. Some writers in later centuries have it that Mary, the mother of Jesus, went with John to Turkey, and that there she expired. For in a town close to Ephesus, there is a grave, as it were, with a church built upon it. That this is the tomb of Mary. Now, this is, I think, conjecture, mainly from the standpoint that by the year, we feel, AD 66, Mary would have been quite old and probably incapable of traveling. And the Lord saw to it that this would serve no particular benefit had Mary left Israel, but rather the Lord committed her under John's care to finally come to peace in Israel and there be buried. The picture which tradition fills up for us about John has merit of being vivid and full. Now, traditions really get out of hand sometimes, especially in the early churches. They have John as being shipwrecked. They have John raising a dead individual, and this dead individual making an ascension into heaven by in full view of people. Now this is to the point of ridiculousness. Now we have to separate those things which are probable and those things which are improbable. And the only way we can logically do this is by seeing what these scriptures have to say on the subjects. Now, while we're in Turkey and visiting the seven churches area, we're able to see the area from a standpoint of not cluttered with the old Roman buildings that were built, but a general prospectus of what existed in that area. And what John, the apostle, had to contend with while he was there. Now, John had no easy time of it while he was in Turkey or Asia Minor. Now, we have to remember that John, by this time now, is getting in years. Well, up in years. Now, John, AD 66, we feel that this is the time approximately when he left, or right before the destruction of Jerusalem. Already the signs were approaching that Jerusalem was going to be destroyed, which happened maybe 70, 4 years later. But signs and hardships were already approaching. So John, I think, is guided by the Lord to leave. But he's getting older, and It's no easy matter, even with the vehicle of today and the modern roads, to travel in Asia Minor or present-day Turkey. Now, John, in all probability, as he first came to the country, probably arrived at Ephesus, and then traveled throughout the seven church area. Now, John probably came by boat from Tyre, Sidon, Jaffa. We don't know. We're not given any information as to how he left. But supposing that he did come from boat, he did come to Ephesus firstly. Presently, Ephesus is 12 miles inland. But Ephesus also was on the shore of the Mediterranean or Aegean Sea. The lands of Turkey are so barren to a point that much erosion takes place. And the inland mountains, as the rains come, they wash the topsoil off. So from Ephesus now to the coast is 12 miles. The riverbed has completely filled up. The coast is about a mile away. We see indications of this in that there are ship docks, as it were, right in Ephesus. The soil that has filled up the riverbed is very salty or crusty from the salt water that was at one time there. Ephesus, we know that the Apostle Paul spoke there. We know that John spoke there. He spoke in the marketplaces. The brethren of Ephesus, whether they lived within the town, the community, or whether they lived outside of the community of Ephesus, were not indicated, but the character of Ephesus is the thing that the Apostle John later on writes about. He doesn't write of Ephesus, he writes of the character existing in Ephesus, as well as the character existing in all the remainder of the six churches, when he says, to the church of Ephesus write, to the church of Laodicea write, and so on and so forth. Well, pinpointing Ephesus here, we drive straight to Denzili, which is where Laodicea is. The drive is approximately 125 miles in there. Now that's where to the first church that we visited after Ephesus, I should say. It's not the first church. But at Denzili is the church of Laodicea. The other churches are not scattered all over the place, but the other churches follow a distinct pattern of going from Denzili or Laodicea up through mountain passes, straight up. They're all on a line. They don't zigzag, but they hold on a straight pattern. This is where the areas of the seven churches exist. In the greater part, most of the buildings, ancient buildings of the seven churches, have been destroyed, ruined, some more, some less. Some have maybe just one column or one archway existing from their time. We find that of all the churches I visited, Ephesus is the most restored and visible. The other churches are also visible. But I thought of Laodicea. I was most particularly interested in Laodicea. Laodicea, this is actually the area in which John finally expires. But Laodicea had a particular noticeable character to me that I thought was very apropos to the moment and to the time that we're living in. Laodicea is on a hilly plain. There's larger mountains surrounding it. From Ephesus to Denzili, or Laodicea, a big valley exists. And at the end of this valley is the ridge of mountains, completely circumflected. Now, Laodicea is on top of a hill. Now, these are big hills. These cover quite a large area. Now, how is it possible, I'm thinking to myself, that here's arches buried underground on top of a hill? They weren't destroyed from top down, but they were filled up from the bottom up. Archways that are immense, some of them as large as this building. The buildings are completely covered on top of the hill. So that the things hidden are revealed. Of all the six churches, there's seven churches, six are in a greater part excavated, looked at by archaeologists, and many things discovered within them. Laodicea is the only church that little, if any, excavation has been done on or looked into. Now, I think this is very interesting from the standpoint of the truth. The time of the Laodicean messenger, only a few recognize the facts pertaining to the Lord's second advent, the Laodicean messenger. Laodicea there, no one understands it. It's not revealed. There's no interest in it. They're not, the Turkish government or the archaeologists have no desire thus far to get into it. There's no desire in the world of the message of the seventh messenger. I think it's very interesting from that standpoint to be looking at it. Well, the other churches, they say, they've been most fully dealt with. You know, from an archaeological standpoint, much has been written about them. And Laodicea proved the most interesting. Now, as we leave the area of the seven churches, we go back, and John, in about AD 95, under the Emperor Dionysian, is imprisoned on the island of Patmos for the testimony of Jesus Christ. Now, the island of Patmos is right down the bottom here. It has a total landmass of about 13 square miles, a shoreline of about 20 miles. Now, the shoreline would consider all the indentations and so forth. The island is volcanic. It stands at an elevation of, the highest elevation is maybe 800 feet, which would be unlike, or much like Waterbury would be from the Long Island Sound, above sea level. The island is rocky and barren. My map is gone, so I have some postcard pictures just to show you what the island would be. It's rocky and barren. It's about 20 miles south of Samos. It's immediately actually off the coast of Asia Minor. 25 miles from Turkey. There are other islands that are closer, but in the greater part, those islands are not inhabited at all. Now, when John was committed here, he was committed for the purpose of the witness of Jesus. the island presently has one municipality, and this is La Scala. No mosques were ever built on this island. It remained a Christian island even under Turkish rule, which it ended in, I think it was 1912. No mosque. This seems remarkable. Always Christian. There's one church on the island, and this is a Greek Orthodox church at present. The topography of the island, we mentioned, is volcanic, hilly. No mines exist where they say John worked in a salt mine here. No salt flats. The sheer cliff precipices that come off of the island would restrain such a character of employment. The island is poor for agriculture. Actually, very few food trees have grown. Very poor soil for olives. It's fair for fig trees. Vegetables grow abundantly within the town of Scala, La Scala. Each house has their own particular garden. But these must be watered every day. Water is a rare commodity on the island. The only way that water could be had is by a few wells, and we mean few. It's not each house does not have a well. Each home is built with a roof that is traps the water, and the water, when it rains, and then it goes into a cistern. Most toilet facilities are used with salt water. However, fresh water or cistern water is used for showers and kitchen sink facilities. We found that on the island there's one cave, natural. Other caves exist on the northern quadrant of the island, northeastern quadrant of the island. The island itself is shaped like very much like a radical kidney, with the most natural and best harbor of all the islands in Greece. Originally, the island was of two parts, northern half, southern half. There is an isthmus in between it. You can see on one of the postcards a picture of a narrow strip of land. This was filled from 200 to 300 AD. No Roman building was ever built on the island. When John was placed there, you will see from the pictures there was probably less than what you see now. The present inhabitation is about 2,500 people. But you imagine the island without this particular amount of people on it. It's very barren. John placed there, this island was as a like Devil's Island. It had no police force with it. You were put on the island, you were a castaway. How you act out a livelihood for sustenance was particularly up to you. John remained here for 18 months. We feel that on the one particular cave, on the one postcard, you'll see a dome church building. On this one, a church dome building in the center of the picture, more or less. This is where this one particular cave is that we feel is where John, by his prestige, by the Lord's mercy, by place of seniority of those who were castaways on the island, this is where probably John lived. We say there's other caves on the northern quadrant of the island, but they're on a cliff precipice, and it would be very much unlikely that anyone would have had them. So in this cave, John had his home, and during the 18 months there, he wrote, by vision,
from the Lord, the Apocalypse, the Apocalypse message to the seven churches. Now John, while he was here, he stated it before that each church had its particular character. Each area had its particular character. Now John knew this beforehand, and the Lord also knew this. So John, by instruction from the Lord, wrote to the seven churches what the message was. John did not only write to the seven churches, but he wrote the total book of Revelation. So the Lord revealed to him during that stay much from the beginning of the plan of God right to the very end. John had the insight, he had the knowledge, he had the humility, the patience, and the long-suffering that the Lord specially used him. The Lord remembered him from Jerusalem. The Lord was so pleased with John in his life that he gave John, of all the apostles, the privilege of dying a good ripe old age. Now, John was being on the island of Patmos, we say, probably around AD 95. Writers place John's death anywhere from AD 95 onward to AD 20. The privilege that we had of seeing Patmos, the difficulty in approaching it because of the ocean currents, made us realize that why this particular island was used as a prison by the Romans. It had nothing to offer for sustenance. There was no way of escape. Trees, you couldn't even find a tree to build a raft or a boat. There was no possible way for one to live from young adult to old man on this island. Once you were cast away, you were always forgotten. Your lifespan on the island was generally nil. So as the Romans, the Greeks, as they placed John on the island for the 18 months, John learned and was taught of by the Lord for the explicit reason of here in humility, in patience, and in suffering, the Lord would especially privilege him to write this book of Revelation, which gives us that even the last enemy that shall be destroyed is the Lord.
All right, now would the friends here like to ask Paul questions? I know I would. It's like we would spend the rest of the time asking questions. John was an old man when he was on the Isle of Patmos, and you said the currents were very strong. So how did John get off? Is there any information?
I tried to find that information out even myself, but he was released. He was released and brought back to Ephesus. And from Ephesus, there again, I didn't have time to get into it, but John, from this point onward, being an old man, it was Frank when I was discussing it, but John, being an old man, was literally carried to the areas of the seven churches. He personally delivered the letter that was written on Patmos. And he was litter bearer to the churches. But the currents, because of tides, the Mediterranean does have a tide, the currents and the prevailing winds from the north make the seas in the Aegean on the afternoon, early afternoon, 1 o'clock, make the seas horrendous. At least I speak from what my observation is. So it was impossible for escape from the island.